Now anyone can live stream straight from Facebook because what could possibly go wrong? Yahoo is a fixer-upper. You should buy it. And a 3D printed hydraulic robot that 3D prints other robots that 3D prints robots that 3D prints robots. All that and a lot more robots on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1486, recorded Wednesday, April 6th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all of the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about technology news, new stuff in technology, new news with people who like the new news about technology.
I like it. I like where this is going.
Yeah, oh, good. Okay. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. I'm so sorry because I was sick over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm fearing that maybe our being on a show yesterday may have gotten you like a little sick.
I think I was a little sick before, you know, plain germs, and I held a lot of strange babies when I was in D.C.
The babies were strange?
They were strange to me, and okay. As were their germs.
That's the strange part, I think. Well, I hope you feel better. Introducing to the show an old friend from CNET, Rich DeMuro, who is now, of course, tech reporter for the KTLA Morning News in Los Angeles. How's it going, Rich?
Great. I want to hear more about these strange babies. I have two kids, and I guess the strangers, they are strange to family members. It's just like, here, take this thing back after like 5 minutes.
Well, that's the thing. You get used to your own kids' germs. I have three kids who have a lot more than three germs. But then when you are, you know, exposed to other strange germs, then they do funny things
to your
voice.
Things go south very quickly. It's great to get you on, Rich, finally to get you on the show. And I don't know, explain to people just a little bit about kind of what you're doing now. You're doing some really cool things down in L.A.
Yeah, so, you know, I do a tech segment based out of KTLA Los Angeles, Channel 5 here in L.A., and it's syndicated to a bunch of different TV stations across the nation. So I talk about consumer fun tech stuff, you know, tech for the average person. People that are just watching the morning news and it's like, oh, here's this guy telling me about some cool new app or some new gadget that came out, like the iPhone SE, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so that's my role. So I kind of talk about stuff in a very easy to understand manner. But myself personally, I'm kind of a nerd and love this stuff and just love getting my hands on all of it. So it's a fun job. And I've been doing it at KTLA for 5 years, of course, was at CNET before that and another station that I won't name. Just fair. For a little bit of time.
Fair.
But yeah, this, but KTLA is amazing and CNET was awesome. And I still keep in touch with a lot of the CNET folks. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you.
We're going to talk a little bit about whether broadcasters, tech broadcasters or any broadcasters are going to be out of a job soon because it will be crowdsourced. Let's talk about that right now. Today, Facebook officially rolled out live videos previously only available to public figures. Live lets all of us use our phones to instantly share video with our Facebook friends who can respond with comments and reactions. The feature hasn't rolled out to everyone yet. If you have it, open your Facebook app on your phone and you'll see a little broadcast icon. It's the one of the man with rings emanating from his head. And you'll see a screen that says, go live on Facebook and you're live. So I guess our work as broadcasters is done now.
Yeah. Everything that we do here, all the planning and everything like that, just thrown out the window because all you need to do is push a button and say whatever's at the top of mind.
That's not what we do.
What I mean is anybody can do that. So why do they need us?
Yeah.
But it's not true. They're very different things. I don't know. What do you think, Rich? Do you think that, I mean, Zuckerberg has basically said many times that he thinks the future is in live video. It seems like, you know, apps like Snapchat are kind of, to some degree, eating Facebook's lunch at this point with a certain demographic anyways. And one of its strengths, of course, is just kind of your ability to go on there and say something that really doesn't matter a whole lot, maybe in the long term. You just kind of throwing stuff out and, you know, it's very, you know, spur of the moment, off the cuff type stuff. Facebook Live video kind of has that element. Do you think this kind of helps Facebook with that crowd?
Yeah, you know, it sort of has both of those elements. It has the fleeting, ephemeral kind of like you say something, it goes. When I do a Facebook post, you know, I put a little bit more time and effort into it. But when I'm on Facebook Live, it does give you that freedom to sort of be yourself, do whatever you want, and know that you are live and you're in the moment. I find it really fascinating because Facebook Live, my audience, that's, you know, the TV audience, is really into Facebook. And it's the engagement level is just huge on Facebook Live. I've done a bunch of shows on there, and it's just amazing. Now, here's the little thing. It's like Facebook is really pumping up Facebook Live videos right now, so it's tough to tell if it's true engagement or if Facebook is kind of gaming the system and making everything that happens on Facebook Live show up a lot faster in people's feeds and getting people to tune in. So that's the tough part right now. But when it comes to Facebook, I think the engagement's there. I'm not sure, you know, for the average person, the use case is a little bit different, you know? So like if I'm having a birthday party for my kids and maybe I want my parents to tune in across the country, Facebook Live might be the easiest way for them to do that because they're on a cell phone. They don't have to download anything. It's already on their phone. But when it comes to Snapchat and stuff like that, I feel like we're getting into places like every message has a different medium. So with Snapchat, I'm going to post something that's just kind of silly, behind the scenes look, something that's I wouldn't necessarily want in a tweet to live on forever. Not that it's bad, but it's just not that important. Whereas Facebook Live, I'm sort of using that as a place to do Q&A with my fans and people that watch me on TV. And then Twitter is just anything you're thinking of in the moment or things that I find interesting. So I feel like all these silos are sort of happening. But I think Live is very important to Facebook, and it is a really interesting tool that they've built. And I think the most important part about it is the fact that there's no barrier to entry. It's so easy that literally anyone can tune in, whether they're on their phone or their computer. So many of these little things in the past, you've had to download some sort of helper app or some sort of login or sign in or get your friends on board. You don't have to do any of that with this. It's just built in.
So the lack of barrier to entry is the best part and also perhaps the worst part. Some horrible things could happen, right? And I don't want to see everyone's live feed in my Facebook feed.
Well, and the way Zuckerberg, so Matt Honan, at BuzzFeed had a really great kind of like in-depth kind of article conversation with Mark Zuckerberg. And one of the things Zuckerberg said in the interview is he says, quote, "I wouldn't be surprised if you fast forward 5 years and most of the content that people see on Facebook and are sharing on a day-to-day basis are video." And I have to imagine, you know, around this also, he's kind of envisioning that hopefully a large part of that or a significant portion of that is live video. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe we're just too early into this to see that sort of influence coming over a network like Facebook or even beyond. Like it also makes me wonder, you know, if Snapchat's going to end up getting into the live video game, if this is something that really works for Facebook. I completely agree with what you're saying, though, Rich, in that all the networks kind of have a different reason for existing. I get somewhat overwhelmed by it because at a certain point, like, it just becomes too much, and the processing that I have to do in order to figure out where I go for this versus that or whatever gets a little overwhelming. And if that's overwhelming to me, I wonder how it is for, you know, people who you know, don't follow technology on a daily basis. So
I think for a more average person who's not necessarily you know, doing a show and doing behind the scenes of their show or whatever, like, you know, I always think of like my mom or someone that's watching TV. They're not necessarily thinking like, where does this message need to go? For them, it's much more natural because they're not building a base. They're not kind of like talking to people that they don't necessarily know. So I think for them, it's a lot more natural. Like for my sister, if she's posting something with her kid, it's going on her Snapchat. If she's posting something that, you know, is like a family get together, it's going on Facebook. So, and if she's posting something funny, it goes on Twitter. So it kind of like, it's almost like it's becoming natural to the average person of, where do I post this stuff? But I agree, it is overwhelming, and it is a lot because you're like, wait a second, do I go here for this? Do I go there for that? But with the live, it's like, where does it really end? And what really will we see? If he's saying everything's going to be live in the future, like how many things do we need live? Like you're at an amusement park. It's like, okay, I'm taking a ride on this roller coaster. Let me go Facebook Live. You know, it's like, how many times do you need to see that? But right now, it is a very fascinating thing because I've been a broadcaster on TV for 15 years now. And the way to reach a lot of people was with all of this equipment and all of this crazy engineering and satellite time and all this stuff. And the first time I ever did a Meerkat, which was pretty much, I think, the first time I went live randomly with my phone, it just was like, it blew my mind, because here it was. I threw away all this technology that it takes and all this expense, and I was just reaching people. And it's still amazing to me in that aspect. And I think that we're just at the beginning of this. And you know, we see big news organizations like E! News just started doing a noontime Facebook Live show. You know, we're just seeing a lot more people experiment with it and see what works and see what doesn't work.
Yeah. I feel a little bit concerned about the privacy aspects of it. I mean, you mentioned the birthday party, Rich, and I think like maybe FaceTime would be a better use of that, you know, because it's only, you're only showing it to, you know, your parents who can't be at the birthday party.
And it's not archived.
Right, exactly.
After the fact.
But because, I just like, what are they going to catch in the background? It feels like, I don't know if you guys have read Dave Eggers' book, The Circle, but it's sort of a fake Google. And part of the ominous things that happen in that book is that everyone starts recording everything and they think it's great because, you know, then we have more honesty. But there's privacy issues here, I think, too, if everyone's walking around with their phone and you don't know if they're recording you or not.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. It's like, as like a journalist, we have rules of where we can shoot, when we can shoot, how we can shoot. And you do, like, if you're on a playground, you're not going to show those kids' faces on TV news, because it's just something that you don't do. They're underage. You don't have their parents' permission. But if someone's in a public street, you can easily show them. So I think a lot of the same rules do apply. But the problem is you have a billion amateurs broadcasting video now in places like, you know, a private party. Let's say I'm at a party that I don't need everyone in the world to know I'm at, but someone at the party is just broadcasting live to the world, and it's easy to do because they're on their phone doing it. So you're right. It does bring up a lot of considerations for the privacy aspect of things, especially when it comes to inside people's homes. No matter where you go nowadays, someone is tweeting, taking a picture, doing something with other people that are there that they may not know. And it's like, okay, well, I mean, I guess this, and I always think in my head, like, well, wait, let me think back 10 years. Could this have happened? I mean, not really. Like, in a way, they might take a picture and share it with a couple people. But now it's like, you're at a dinner, someone takes a picture, they tweet it out, everyone knows you're at that dinner. Not that I have anything to hide with the dinners I'm going to, but it's just one of those things you think about. And it is interesting, like you said.
You just don't want people to know that you're eating roast beef. I get it. In other Facebook news, its Messenger chat app is becoming more than just a chat app. Facebook has made that no secret at this point. And now, ahead of Facebook's F8 conference next week, the company is including some examples of how this new functionality is going to exist inside Messenger. Today, Facebook began suggesting, for some users anyways, a number of businesses that you can open up a chat with. It isn't really clear to what extent those chats are helpful or effective. Biz Carson at Business Insider wrote about it and was able to get Chase to kind of address some general queries, I'm assuming account of queries, that sort of stuff, but got no such reaction from other companies that were inside the interface, like Lyft or ClassPass. And we've talked in the past about kind of the march of businesses into Messenger as Messenger becomes kind of more of a platform beyond just chat. It was just last February that there were some documents leaked to TechCrunch that basically stated that businesses would want to open up some sort of chat communication with its users in order to be able to send ads to them eventually. Like, they could only send ads if they've already established that connection. So this might be kind of a part of that. Those were leaked documents. So it's, you know, we still don't know, you know, there has been no official mention of that at this point.
I think there was a Verge article saying Newegg has officially launched a chat within Facebook Messenger. You can chat about your order status and returns exchanges. I don't know about you, but I never use those customer service chat things on websites. Like, I feel like it takes a long time, and they never give me they never help me.
Yeah, on
me.
The sites that kind of, hey, do you want to chat with someone right now? Sometimes I do, and I think that it's like, I don't want to call in, so sure, I'll do this. And then you end up spending two or three times longer with that. Mm-hmm. Having said that, sometimes customer service on Twitter is actually really good, right? Like, you put, right?
Yeah. I think that's what this is all about. I think it's all about Twitter. Those little chat windows, like, to me, I always imagine that the person behind that chat window is like less qualified than the person I can get when I call. I don't know why that is or if that's even true, but it just feels that way. Especially when they're pushing that chat. It's like you hover on your banking website for 5 minutes thinking about, you know, something, and it's like, oh, hold on, you must need to chat with someone. But I think this is a direct attack on Twitter, and especially, I don't know about you guys, but the number one thing I see complaints about on Twitter are airlines. And so people love to just bash airlines, tweet their problem with their seat and this and that. And I think that what the end game is here is that a lot of these companies would love to take those conversations more offline, but they'd also love to be more accessible to users. And so this kind of strikes that balancing act of, like, if you go on Delta and chat with them on your Facebook Messenger app, you think you're going to get a quick response because it's Facebook Messenger. You know, you chat with someone, they're right there. But Delta loves it because now that entire conversation is happening offline.
Right.
And so I think that that's part of this, but I also think it's kind of smart. You're on your phone. We're making phone calls less often. So if I can chat with a company when I need help, and if I have a good experience with that and try it again, it could be really valuable. I'm not sure, though, if this will take off, but it's definitely something that's smart for them to try.
Well, again, it's power in numbers, and Facebook and Messenger have insane user numbers. So rolling out a full platform and big support with names you recognize and everything, I think it's got a pretty good chance. Actually, speaking of airlines, last week we saw KLM, Royal Dutch Airlines, integrate, begin to roll out features into Messenger that allows people to, you know, deal with things like their boarding passes, check-in reminders, flight status updates, customer service queries, all that kind of stuff. And this is kind of, this right here is really the start of a lot of what we're going to begin to see inside Messenger. Yes, it remains to be seen as far as, like, whether customers really want this and plan, you know, will ultimately use Messenger in this way. But, I mean, it's looking pretty slick, and it's got Facebook behind it, you know, with a lot of people that use this every single day. Kind of makes sense to keep them in that world, you know?
I'm still going to publicly shame United Airlines and Comcast on Twitter because I can.
You and the rest of the world.
Fair enough.
I mean, it's like my ongoing joke when I'm on my timeline. It's just like, okay, how far do I have to scroll before there's someone I know on vacation that's complaining about their airline?
No kidding.
Never fails. But back to that real quick, that KLM thing. It is smart because, you know, a lot of times you have to download your boarding pass or, you know, save it, whatever you do it. You know, you keep it in your email. I mean, I don't really print mine anymore. But it is kind of neat to know that you can just text, you know, hey, give me my boarding pass. And it just figures that out and immediately gives you that without searching through your email, whatever you have to do. It's just a tiny use case, and it could just get better and better as it goes along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on. The news about Yahoo is worse than we thought. So says Kara Swisher at Recode. Swisher has gotten her hands on the secret Yahoo sale book that the company has passed around to prospective buyers. Swisher couldn't publish the book on Recode, but she tells us that it shows a company that has been in serious free fall. In addition to sad numbers, declining Asian assets, and an underwhelming, yet to be announced digital assistant called Index, there's an overall confusion contained in the book and in answers that Yahoo's leaders are providing. It's unclear, Swisher says, which parts of the company are making money and which are not. So they have, they're going to take offers on Monday, apparently, if anyone's interested.
Somebody's going to be interested. It's Yahoo. No matter how bad the scenario is, it's still Yahoo, and someone is going to feel like they can come in and make a change. How do you feel about this, Rich? Do you think someone can come in and make a positive change that's going to wipe out years of history?
I feel like Yahoo has been running on fumes now for like a decade, and it's just one of those things that, like, if I ever need to check if my internet's working, what's the website I go to? Yahoo.com. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the kind of thing that it's in our psyche. It's there. It's got to be around forever. But the use case scenario for me and Yahoo is just not there at this point. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people check their email through Yahoo. But otherwise, I just see it as a site that is just, the leadership is just not there. There's too many things going on. They've tried, like, even when David Pogue went there, I thought that was so cool. I thought it was such a neat thing for him to jump from New York Times to there. And then the reality of it sets in. We're like, there's just no direction. There's no sort of, like, I didn't know how long that would last. And it just, that's sad to me. But the reality is they're a homepage for a lot of people by default. So I think they ride on a lot of that stuff. And in that article, Kara said how, you know, it's like, it's kind of like moving around money. You know, they paid Netscape or whoever or Firefox for the referrals, and then they make some money off of that. So it's like they're paying for the revenue in a weird way. And that can only last for so long. And they just haven't had a breakout product in so long that I just don't know what's going to happen. So someone will buy them, sure, and it'll just be folded into the mix. But it's such a great brand name that it's just sad to see what's been going on with them.
Mm-hmm. One of the potential buyers compares it to a dilapidated house in Silicon Valley. Like, you're still going to buy it, even though it's a lot of money.
And if there's so much to do.
It's a fixer-upper. Yahoo is a fixer-upper. Yeah, in Silicon Valley.
Is a voice assistant, is that going to, you know, help?
I don't know. I mean, that was one of
I feel like it's kind of late in the game for that, too, right?
And it's hard to create.
Yeah.
Well, especially because a voice assistant relies on a lot of the data that you store with that service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Google and Cortana and somewhat Siri. But, you know, so, I mean, unless you're storing a lot of stuff with them and interacting with Yahoo on a daily basis, this index can't be much better than what's out there.
Right.
It could tell you what's on Tumblr, perhaps. Tell you the news. And
it could tell you what's on the front page of Yahoo. You're right.
There you go.
Tell you what people were doing in the year 2000.
Yes.
And, show you your Flickr picture.
You're not painting a very, very bright picture of this voice assistant.
No.
All right. Moving on. You thought the browser wars were over, at least for a little bit. They've only just begun, maybe. Today, Vivaldi launched its Vivaldi browser after a lengthy 14-month beta period. The Vivaldi browser aims to be a browser for power users, has a number of customization options, which is kind of a pushback to that whole minimalist approach that Google's Chrome first set out to tackle 8 years ago. Speaking of Chrome, it's also, you know, based on the Blink rendering engine, which is the same as Chrome. So if you're running Vivaldi, you can install and run Chrome extensions into your experience, which, you know, I installed Vivaldi. I did that with LastPass because I can't live without LastPass. It's a pretty neat browser. Lots of customization ability, you know, lots of settings. If you go into the settings and preferences, it's just page after page of customization. It's another browser. I don't know. It's hard for me to look at another browser and be like, yes, this is going to take any sort of mind share away from some, you know, the things that already exist. What do you think? What do you guys think?
I agree. It's tough to get me to switch. I mean, I hate to be like a Chrome fanboy, but it's like it does what I need. It's there. It syncs with my other devices. It's like at this point, I find it tough for anyone to really switch because they just like, I'm not sure what features people need. I mean, you still have a majority of people using Internet Explorer on their, you know, as the default, and it's tough for them to switch. So I feel like it's like people like me, like that go, you know, to my parents' house and I like switch them to Chrome and I'm like, you're going to like this. Just try this, you know? But it's one of these things that there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I think that the fact that it has extensions built in from the Chrome browser. So the fact that those work on there definitely gives it a foot up on the rest of the browsers out there that don't, because that's the toughest part about adopting a new product is the support and like the stuff you can do with it. Like you said, if LastPass wasn't supported, you would have dropped this within 24 hours.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the reality because that's a tool that you use and need. And when you get that autofill and you're used to it, you can't live without it. Yeah. And if your browser doesn't have it, it's like taking a step back in time. So definitely helps that they have those. And I think that, you know, look, it's like Android, how you can customize it and do all these fun little things. There's a segment of people that do like that and they want that full control over the browser. So let's just see where this thing goes.
Yeah. A bunch of former Opera engineers actually are part of the team, including, you know, one of the co-founders of Opera Software and one of the, you know, ex-CEOs, Jan von Techner. So, you know, they've got the Opera team behind it. And I don't know. I've got it installed. I tend to use all browsers in one way or another, so I'm sure I'll keep it there and use it from time to time. There we go.
Well, finally, if all goes as planned, soon there will be robots who can 3D print robots who can 3D print more robots. Mm-hmm. MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, or CSAIL, has created the first hydraulic robot created entirely in one piece, 3D printed in one piece. CSAIL co-prints solids and liquids at the same time with fully articulated parts, all using a commercially available printer.
This just blows me away. Like, literally, the 3D printed robot can walk out of the printer if it's powered. Like, you print the robot and it walks out if you can provide it power. I love this.
Yeah, hydraulics are cool.
Yeah.
And it immediately strangles you to death.
Well, is that little cute thing going to strangle you, Rich? I don't know.
Tickle you to death.
Yeah. It looks more like a tickler.
I mean, this stuff is amazing. I love this stuff. It's so fascinating. And it's just, I mean, we are such at the tip of the iceberg of this 3D printing. And, You know, I mean, just the way they described how they're doing this is amazing, and it just is going to get better and better. And I love the implications for just so many applications in life, you know, whether it's parts, whether it's remote areas of the world that they can, you know, it's just, it's getting amazing. And this is a very good example of that.
Yeah. Cool to see where.
Yeah. They can't do complex tasks yet.
Yet.
Oh, darn it.
Oh, you mean it's not good enough?
Yet.
Yet. No, yet. It'll get there. I mean, this is tip of the iceberg. All right, coming up, we're going to chat with Lauren Hawkinson from The Next Web about how Reddit is finally allowing its users to do things like block other users. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode, and that is Blue Apron. You need to know how to cook. Do you know how to cook? Well, you probably should learn how. It's a very powerful skill. Not only will you feel like you know your way around the kitchen, but cooking at home means eating healthier, saving money, instead of, you know, always ordering expensive takeout again and again. Sometimes it's difficult to know where you start, and that's kind of what Blue Apron is all about. They have you covered for less than $10 per meal, and Blue Apron will deliver all the fresh ingredients that you need to create home-cooked meals, and they make it super easy. You just follow the step-by-step instructions that they send to you in the box with all the food, all of the individual ingredients that make up your meals. Each meal can be prepared by you in 40 minutes or less. No overwhelming trips to the grocery store. No more of that sad, sad takeout. No matter what your dietary preferences are, Blue Apron actually has you covered. They make it a breeze to discover and prepare dishes like crispy catfish sandwiches with spiced lime aioli and chopped salad. There's braised tandoori cauliflower with spinach rice and cilantro mint chutney right in your own kitchen. It's close to dinner time, so I'm salivating right now. Cook with ingredients that you've never used before. Ingredients like watermelon radishes, yuzu juice, labneh cheese, all sorts of ingredients that you've never seen before. You get to actually cook with them now. Recipes are between 500 to 700 calories per portion. It's yummy. It's delicious. It's good for you. It's all of the above. Right now, you can get your first two meals free. All you got to do is go to blueapron.com/twit. Check out this week's menu and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. Check it out for yourself. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. So Reddit has long been a place of wide open discussion, which, as we know on the internet, can lead to disagreement. And that can lead to a whole lot worse. Joining us to talk about a new anti-harassment measure on Reddit is Lauren Hawkinson from The Next Web. How's it going, Lauren?
Hi, pretty well. How are you?
Excellent. It's always good to get you on the show, so thanks for joining us today. Tell us a little bit about this new feature that Reddit is rolling out.
Yeah, so, I mean, as people have probably known, Reddit is historically laissez-faire about its social interactions. But over the past year, as they've sort of had their new executive change and sort of really put a concerted effort into targeting and helping curb harassment, they've released a new user block feature. Now, they've had user block available in a really basic form for some time, but that generally only involved private messages. Now, when you block a user on Reddit, you won't be able to see their responses or their comments. It's basically like a mute, but on Reddit.
So this is basically for the user that's doing the blocking. Everyone else can still see those posts, though, right?
Yes. Yeah, so it's a one-to-one block. So the user who blocks a person, the blockee, if you would, the blockee does not see that the blocker has blocked them. So they think that everything's okay. Curbs on the retaliation, but everybody else can still see that interaction. And also, user blocks aren't applicable to either admins or mods. So if you are in charge of moderating a community, you can't just block a user and not see them. You still have to sort of go through and make sure that everybody is behaving correctly.
How has this worked for Twitter? And I mean, not by worked as in how is it implemented, but has this been pretty effective in people's experience on Twitter? I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is the out of sight, out of mind approach, you know, may work for me not seeing the thing that's happening, but the thing that's happening is still happening. Is it too aggressive to go further and trying to remove the thing that's happening?
I think that that's a really like high level philosophical viewpoint. Honestly, like there's a lot of discussion around this very particular topic. There's a firm camp that believes that being able to control the voices that are around you is essential in having a really great, safe online experience, whether that's on Twitter or if it's on Facebook or on Instagram. You know, an individual user should have a right to stop seeing speech if they don't want to see it. And that's really the point of a block. However, there has been an increasing move towards the idea of counter speech, which is sort of the other side of that. That's when you see people like Sheryl Sandberg asking the users to like bomb somebody by giving a lot of likes, by trying to, you know, steer the conversation back towards a positive direction and not degrading down into arguments and giving into trolling. So, you know, it's two different schools of thought. And I think that at this point, you know, it's hard to tell which one is really the most effective. But at this point, I think that Reddit has recognized that it at least needs to have some basic tools on hand for its users so they can have the experience that they want.
I mean, I think as far as like blocking and muting, I think it is enough. I mean, the problem with Twitter is that it's at you. They can at you. So you see it and everybody who follows you sees it. I mean,
right.
People have been writing nasty things on the internet forever. I mean, Rich, you've been in TV for 15 years. You know, I was before I took a break to do other things. And so it's been a while. I tend to think that partly the internet has gotten a little bit meaner. But it's also Twitter because it's more at you. Like there's a lot of stuff that people say about me that I don't know if I don't go searching for it unless it's on Twitter. What do you think?
I mean, TVs, historically you got like emails from people or whatever, I guess letters from people, and then it became emails and now it's tweets. But, I mean, it's one of those things where I always wonder about this because, you know, on my Facebook page, I always, you know, you don't get a lot of stuff, but you do get some stuff that's like questionable, you know, whether it's directed towards you or other people on your page, you know, and I feel like as the person who's running the page, do I need to delete their comment or do I let other people sort of chime in on their comment to like correct them for me? Or, you know, it's like, who is in charge of policing this? So I think what Reddit's saying is it kind of comes down to your personal experience and what you personally are okay with seeing. And if someone's getting at you and you choose to block them, just like kind of on Twitter, you can block someone or mute them. I think that those are good tools for the average person, but I agree. It's like Jason said, it's kind of a bigger philosophical discussion of should this stuff still exist out there? Like, should other people be able to see it and comment and tweet about it? Or should it just go away? And I always wonder what the end effect is to blocking someone, because sometimes when they go to tweet you, they can see that they're blocked. And then it's like, what is that person thinking? Like, do they get meaner? Do they take it to the next level? Do they want to go somewhere else? So it's not like it just removes the thing from ever happening. I mean, the person who said these terrible things is still existing and they're still out there just ready to pounce on someone else.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe we just need nicer people in this world. I don't know.
Is this going to create nicer people?
No, I don't think so.
No.
One can only hope. Yeah, Reddit users don't necessarily normally take lightly to anything that obstructs kind of the flow of communication through the network. Do we have any kind of early indications as far as how they're taking this change? Is this effective or reasonable?
Well, it's still really early on. I mean, today the one of the original Reddit engineers, Chris Lowe, who operates on Reddit under the name Kaiser Sosa, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, like, good job. Awesome.
That's two references in one. You can't be beat on a Reddit name with that. But, you know, he got Reddit Gold for the announcement, and it seems to so far, you know, be pretty good. I think that, you know, what it's sort of saying is, you know, Reddit as an entity is not there to block or to curb content or to moderate what you say beyond what the group rules allow, and beyond what, you know, the terms of service allow. But you as a user should be empowered to make your own choices and to have what you think would be the ideal experience. Because it's individualist, and because I think that, you know, you have the tool and either you use it or you don't, there's going to be less of a backlash than what you saw previously when Reddit was trying to curb harassment by forcing certain subreddits that were particularly racist or sexist to go dark, as it were. I think that this is definitely a step in a different direction, and one that so far hasn't incurred a lot of backlash.
So this is,
and
a big...
if it is, it's just been blocked.
Yeah, you exactly. Just aren't seeing it.
Yeah. And I mean, that is interesting because you don't know if you're blocked, if you're a troll and someone blocks you, you don't know. So that's a different way to go about it.
So you're just kind of screaming into the canyon.
I guess.
So can you explain just how it would work? So let's say someone, you know, because it used to be for private messages, that's pretty cut and dry. But in commenting, so if someone sort of includes you in the comment or writes back to something that you're saying, is that when you're able to block them now?
So basically, as long as you have your block list up, if you click the block user button while viewing a reply in your inbox, which you get an inbox alert for basically anything that you do on Reddit, mm-hmm. From that point on, you don't see the blocked user's profile photo, you don't see their comments, you don't see their posts, you don't see any of their messages. It'll just be gone. It'll like disappear, like they never even existed. But that person won't know that you've blocked them. So they won't get an alert if they try to respond to you and they say, oh, so-and-so's blocked you. So it's kind of a combination between a mute and a block,
right?
In a lot of ways. So like they can't directly contact you the way that somebody could if you muted them, but they won't know that they're blocked. So it's a twofold tool that I think kind of really gets at the heart of the fact that Reddit is trying to make sure that people feel like they can safely avoid certain speech that might bother them, or harassment in particular, heavy duty trolling, raids, that kind of stuff, without incurring retaliation.
Well, I think it's a good move. Excellent. And Reddit, I'm happy that Reddit is kind of stepping in there and giving more tools, because it's certainly one of those networks that is rife with that kind of negativity, and depending on the subreddit that you're in. So it's a good place for that. Lauren Hawkinson, always a pleasure getting you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Tell everyone where they can follow your awesome work.
Thank you. Well, actually, tomorrow is my last day at the Next One.
Breaking news.
I know. Oh, yeah. Tomorrow's my last day at the Next Web. So stay tuned and follow me at L Hawkinson on Twitter for my next move. And I'm sure I will be back soon.
We'll certainly be in touch. Now we are very intrigued. So we'll get you back. Congratulations, I think.
Thank you.
All right. Here we go. All right. Thanks, Lauren. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Now we have an email from Matt. He writes, I would like to help with some clarification on the debate on the full room tracking of the Vive versus the Oculus Rift. Addie Robertson mentioned that the Oculus Rift does not give you that much more room coverage with a single camera. However, here is a link to an extensive test showing you just how amazing the Oculus Rift tracking is with a full room with just the single included camera sensor.
And yes, there is the man on the floor testing. So basically, you can see the camera up on the ladder. This is my favorite part. He runs into a chair. That's always a lot of fun. There we go. But you can see up on the ladder is the camera that's kind of tracking the room. And yeah, it's doing a pretty darn good job. I watched through the video. There are a couple of times, I think right here, maybe where it snaps a little bit, where it kind of loses tracking because he's a little bit on the edge and everything. But I have to imagine it's probably still going to be a sharper tracking with, you know, when you've got a multiple camera setup like the HTC Vive has, but this is pretty sharp as well. Rich, I'm very curious because this is pretty much the last couple of weeks have been VR weeks because of Oculus Rift and HTC Vive. Have you had a chance to play around with any of the VR? Are you swept up in all this stuff? What do you think?
You know, for my audience, we're not doing as much coverage on the VR stuff. I mean, some of the more consumer versions of them, but I've tried them all on, and I think they're amazing. I think that this is just it's such a growth area for tech. It's not even funny. I mean, we're going to build entire worlds inside these things. I feel like I'm talking about Second Life, but I mean, like entire experiences. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited for it. I think that it's tough to like. It's funny because we get so caught up in this tech, you know, the tech people. But when I talk to like regular people per se at like parties, you know, that I go to, and it's just like they don't even know kind of what this is all about, you know, augmented reality versus virtual reality. So I think there's so much more that needs to be done with it. And we're at the forefront, and I'm super excited for all the possibilities. I think that my personal use case will just be watching like a movie on the plane or something inside VR. So I don't know why I'd need to do that, but that's what I'll end up using the headset for eventually.
You'll trick your mind into thinking I'm not on an airplane watching a movie. I'm in a movie theater watching
a
movie.
Beautiful movie theater.
Yeah, I'm on the beach watching a movie on my tablet.
And if airlines could provide the VR goggles, then they wouldn't need the chat customer service.
The next frontier.
Would have no idea that the food was bad and the service was horrible.
When they walk through the aisle handing out headphones, soon it'll be like this huge like stockpile of VR goggles. Mm-hmm. totally going to happen.
You just throw in the seat pocket in front of you when you're done with them.
Yes.
It's like in like 15 pieces. There you go. Take
easy peasy.
My favorite VR experience so far is that we have the Oculus Rift set up right behind Jason's head over there, and people come and play with it while we're doing the show. And I feel like that's just a hint at the alienation I'm going to feel from other people doing VR around me in the future.
It's going to take a couple of years before you feel totally alienated, but yeah, you're right. It'll happen. TNT's fan of the day is Gary Ashton at Hoppy Bounce on Twitter, who shared a picture of a small collection, and by small I do mean two, but I'm sure there are more maybe, of motorcycle helmets, noting that he listens, quote, with my Klipsch rugged S4i in ear while I ride. I can only imagine going very, very fast, because our show gets you pumped up. That's right. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
So earlier we talked about how the barrier to entry for broadcasting has been lowered by Facebook Live. Perhaps the future of Facebook Live will be more like 9-year-old reporters like Hildy Kate Lisiak. Today, Lisiak told The Guardian that even though she's only 9 years old, she can still break crime news, including murders, in her neighborhood. Lisiak was roundly criticized on Facebook, and she fought back. Let's watch that video.
Hildy Kate Lisiak here, reporting from the Orange Street News. Yesterday, there was a murder in Sears Road. It happened just a few blocks from my house. I got the tip from a good source that was able to confirm. Then I went straight to the scene and asked neighbors for more information. I worked very hard. Because of my work, I was able to inform the people that there's a terrible murder hours before my competition even got to the scene. In fact, some of these adult red newspapers were reporting the wrong news or no news at all.
All right.
She's
taken us to task.
She knows her stuff.
Yeah.
I got to say, my tip on delivery is you gotta avoid the touch in the face. Although I'm guilty of that. I'm totally guilty. But that's just one small tip.
The blaring music in the background.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Right.
Was that recorded at a Panera? I don't know. I was one of those nerdy, like, you know, journalism kids as a kid. Like, I started my own little newspaper that I, like, delivered to the neighbors, tried to charge them for it. I love what she's doing. I think it's a very heavy topic.
No kidding.
Murder for a 9-year-old. Like, I don't even want my 9-year-old to know about murder. I don't have a 9-year-old yet, but when he is 9.
Right.
You know, it's one of these things where it's cute, but, you know, I see both sides to it. I think that it's cute that she's doing the news, and I think the community news is more of what she's doing in general. So it's nice. And, her dad was a journalist, or is a journalist, I think, at the New York Post or something like that. So she's got it in the blood. But the murder thing just really threw me off, because it's just weird to hear a 9-year-old being like, I told you first about that murder in my neighborhood. It's just weird.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think later in the video, she talks about, she reads all of her mean criticisms, all the comments, and some of them are like, what happened to tea parties? So I have more advice for. I have some constructive advice instead of what happened to the Tea Party, because I'm right with you. She should totally be a journalist, but I just think she should maybe not report her murder until she has all the facts. She also earlier she offers cash rewards for crime tips. Now, Rich, that's illegal, right? As a journalist.
I don't know. I've never paid anyone for any news in my entire career. So I mean, I know like National Enquirer might do that, but. We don't pay for any tips. So I don't know. Where's she getting this money to pay for tips on murders?
Know.
I mean, this is a well-funded news operation. This is different than most news operations I've been a part of.
Right. She obviously knows what she's doing. Yeah, she's doing something right. Or she's very, very lucky. Rich, it's a pleasure getting you on, man. I would love to get you back on the show at some point. Tell people, I don't know, where they can find you. I know you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Where do you want people to kind of follow your work online?
Sure. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/richontech. That's my main page. And then on Twitter, of course, that's kind of my day-to-day, you know, whatever I'm thinking at the moment, twitter.com/richdemiro. If you're in LA or one of the other cities I'm on, just check out the morning news and you'll see me making, you know, that typical fun news stuff where we talk about the day's tech and, you know, all that consumer stuff. So I have a blast of what I do. I love talking technology. You guys were a blast today. So it was fun. Thanks for having me on.
Right on. Really appreciate you coming on today, Rich. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care, man. All right, so tomorrow's guest is going to be Mike Hurley from Relay.fm. Looking forward to that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us. That's TNT@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you can't watch the show live and you want to get it right away, subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, nice things mean things. I rarely ever block people unless you're violent. I am at Megan Maroney.
Ooh, a little scared. And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. Thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you tomorrow. High five.